Tua.
Fires. Touchdown, Miami. Waddle snuck into the end zone of Miami.
Boy, tight throw, tight window. They had to get that touchdown on that play to get it.
What's up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. How's it going, everybody? I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and as always, I am here to bring you your daily dose of Miami Dolphins football. And on today's show, been looking forward to this one really since the Giants game. It's preview day. We're talking Dolphins and Jets. We'll go position by position and preview this matchup, how Miami can make it back-to-back season sweeps over the Jets, a fifth win out of six tries against the rival under Brian Flores, and take the advantage in the regular season all-time series at 55 apiece right now, at least in the regular season series. We'll also give you the three takeaways, tell you how the Jets arrived at their current position they are in, and a whole heck of a lot more from the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
We have a busy edition of Drive Time ahead, so let's go ahead and jump right in. And once again, it is Jets week. For the 112th time all time in the regular season and the 113th time here between these two division rivals, if you include the playoffs, shout out to the 1982 AFC Championship game and shout out to AJ Duway. We did this a few weeks ago, right? But nothing really changed as far as the 10,000-foot view for the Jets. I mean, Joe Douglas arrives, starts going to work on that roster, maximizes his assets, and accumulates a bunch of draft capital as well as salary cap space. And he unloaded a big-name player in Jamal Adams for two high draft picks and has used that, or began to use that, to really infuse this roster with talent. He lands his rookie quarterback with the second overall pick in the draft back in April. Then he immediately goes to work on the offensive line, trading a pair of picks in rounds two and three, or rather, I think a pair of third-round picks, to go up and get interior offensive lineman, left guard Elijah Vera Tucker, after selecting their left tackle in the 2020 draft in Mekhi Becton out of Louisville. I think you see the plan in place there, right? We saw what rookie Elijah Moore can do in the game last time around. We saw Michael Carter do his thing out of the backfield as well. Now, the latter is back this week to supplement their backfield. The former is out, and so too is another prized acquisition at the skill spots and receiver Corey Davis. But you can see where they're working to kind of build up the offense around their young quarterback, and they have all those future assets to put into the defense or the team in general, however they see fit. But eventually you have to put pieces on both sides of the football, right? They've been offensive heavy the last couple years. Maybe this season it goes more towards defense, or maybe in 2 years. It doesn't really matter, but you get the point. They did some good business on the defensive side of the football this offseason and again in season with two moves. Their biggest addition of the entire offseason was lost back in training camp in Carl Lawson, an absolute monster who's going to get back and really terrorize the AFC East in years to come when he does get back and healthy. Then, in season, they locked up, I think, their best current player in John Franklin Myers. So they have some pieces over there as well. It's a 3-10 football team, but they're still building, they're competitive, they take on the mindset of their head coach, and they play tough, smart football under Robert Saleh. Let's go ahead and kick this thing off as we do each Thursday with the opponent's quarterback versus our safeties. And we'll kick it off here with a word from head coach Brian Flores on the Jets' rookie quarterback.
I think Zach Wilson's a very talented, a young player in this league, big arm, mobile. And I think he's getting better every week. I think this is a player who's, ascending. I think, it's like any young player, there's been some bumps. I know he was out for a little bit. He came back. He's played well. And I think this will be a big challenge for us. So we're, that's what we're preparing for and against.
You heard Coach mention some of the bumps in the road there for Zach Wilson. And you might remember his run up to the draft, the pro day, all the impressive throws that he showed he can make, falling away from his target, on the move, changing the arm slot, going down to three quarters, sometimes even completely sidearmed. He's one of these new generation quarterbacks who I like to compare to shortstops in baseball, where it doesn't matter if they're, and if you're not a baseball fan, stay with me here, sliding into the center field grass to their left, they still find a way to clear their hips and whip that ball across the diamond, or if they have to go to the backhand in the sixth hole, the sixth hole's between third base and shortstop for you non-baseball fans, and go to the jump pass. Like, these quarterbacks that throw from those shortstop platforms seem to be more and more prevalent. So he's immensely talented. But as we've seen for just about every rookie quarterback to ever do it, and there's obviously some anomalies out there, Dan Marino, certainly one of them, there is an acclimation and adjustment period to play this position at this level. And honestly, that's just a rookie thing. Not just a rookie thing. Like, quarterbacks are always learning, but you're not just going to have all the answers until you've seen. I mean, do we go with the Malcolm Gladwell route here and talk about breaking the 10,000 hour rule? Maybe it's not 10,000 game snaps or practice and game reps, but 10,000 hours makes sense, and you just can't get there until you're at a certain point in life. So, I mean, even some of the most decorated young quarterbacks will still have those dips in their consistency, right? We've seen even Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen have hit some valleys this season, and they're MVP type of quarterbacks, Super Bowl MVPs in that discussion there. And where does that typically come from? You know, playing quarterback from the pocket is that's where the job is mostly done. Those off-platform throws and the workout throws, like a pro day or a combine workout, or plays that make the highlight reel that you see for weeks in a row on Twitter or SportsCenter, those are the splash plays. And like Coach Flores talks about with sacks and picks and things of that nature, those splash plays make up, you know, a fraction of your actual workload. Like, better than 90% of what a quarterback does is boring, and I'm using air quotes heavily here because I don't find it boring, but you get what the Jeff I'm saying, right? And that brings me to a larger point. Like, the bumps along the road will flatten out when you can start to master that part of the game, identifying the defense, reading the coverage, knowing what you have in terms of your call and your concept, the weakness of the defense that you're seeing opposed to you, and the way you can exploit those defenses, then quickly process the information as things move for you post-snap. Does, you know, your seam route get carried? Does the curl flat defender take the bait on the flat and you have to go into the honey hole back behind the underneath cornerback? Like, there's so many different things that happen in the time you get the football to the time the ball comes out. And it's only 2.5-3 seconds most of the time, but a lot happens in that time. And that's not so much an evaluation on Zach Wilson as it is just about young quarterbacks in general. But that's where he and all young quarterbacks have to stress, is finding ways to win from the pocket and play the position in the traditional sense. Not to be the old guy here, but like those fun, you know, they're basically Patrick Mahomes types of throws, and he does them all the time. But defenses have taken those away from him this year, and he's having statistically a down year in terms of what we're used to, which is 45,000 touchdown passes and 8,257 yards. Like, there's things you can do to get away from those, and they still make up just a fraction of your overall play. So what does that mean for Miami? Well, we're going to see what the Dolphins have at the safety position here, because Eric Rowe's availability is, well, he's available. We'll see about Javon Holland, and then Brandon Jones missed the last two games with an elbow injury as well. And beyond that, we've talked about Nick Needham getting some reps and some split safety looks. We know about Clayton Fegelum providing depth at the position, and also Will Parks, a recent acquisition here to the roster, is in the mix as well. But I think the key here harkens back to what we talked about in terms of the learning curve of playing this position at this level. The Dolphins really excel in their ability to disguise coverage, who's in what role, who's coming, who's dropping, all of that. And with Rowe and Jones and Needham's various usage and the depth at the position, Miami maintains that flexibility and uncertainty in the offense's mind. Change the picture post-snap because you have players that can play 42 different roles, right? So some quick Zach Wilson numbers here for you guys. We know Miami blitzes a lot, 38.1% of the time, according to Pro Football Reference, which is second only behind Tampa. There's a 1.2% difference there, but a 3.4% difference between Miami and number three ranked Baltimore. So the Dolphins and Bucks blitz substantially more than anybody else in the NFL. Zach Wilson versus the blitz, 45.1% completion. That's 71 attempts, 7 sacks, a 4.9 yards per attempt average, 0 touchdowns and 2 picks. Versus pressure, so whether it's 4 guys or a blitz getting after him, 29.5% completion, 88 attempts on 121 dropbacks, that means 29 sacks, 5 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns and 3 picks. So I think it's going to be a key to get that sorted for him. I mean, he's got to find a way to deal with pressure better. And maybe it won't. Maybe there will be more of a 4-man pass rush. The Dolphins are certainly capable of playing coverage and not coming after the quarterback. That's not what they usually do. That's one of the things I'm looking for here as far as the storyline. How does Miami attack the rookie quarterback? Because Pro Football Focus has Zach at 68% and 6.6 yards per attempt when kept clean, but 4 touchdowns and 8 picks. So if he puts the ball in harm's way, capitalize, win that turnover margin, and that'll go a long way towards victory. We mentioned this in the intro, but the Jets will be down a couple of their top receiving threats as we move here to our next position, the Jets receivers and tight ends versus the Miami cornerbacks. No Elijah Moore, no Corey Davis. So it's Braxton Berrios, Keelan Cole, Jamison Crowder, and Denzel Mims in the receiver room with Ryan Griffin, Trayvon Wesco, and Kenny Yeboah at tight end for the Jets as far as Wednesday goes for their active guys on their roster. Last week, let's go over their snap percentages they played in the game and where they play in terms of inside, outside, and their season-long stats. You ready for that? So Jamison Crowder played 90% of the snaps last week. The go-to guy there, right? Him and Keelan Cole surpassed 80%. We'll get to that here in just 1 second. But he plays 80% of the time in the slot, so he's their slot receiver. 64 targets from that spot and a 70% completion rate when they throw to Jamison Crowder. Braxton Berrios is the other primary slot guy, and he's played 41% of the snaps last week. 76% of the time he does play, he's in the slot. He has 42 targets this season and a 76% completion rate. So about three-fourths of the balls that go over the middle for the Jets to the slot receivers, they get completed. Keelan Cole, he played 83% of the snaps last week. So you're probably going to get a good mix of Cole and Crowder and probably a mix of Berrios and Mims in there as well. But Cole plays 83% of his snaps out wide as well. 36 targets, a 56% completion. There's a theme there, right? Denzel Mims, 33% of the snaps last week. 80% of his workload this season comes out wide. 14 targets, 57% completion. So when you force the Jets to throw wide, typically, you get about a 15% reduction in completion percentage. At tight end, Ryan Griffin, 55% of the snaps last week. He plays 80% total either in line or in the slot. 60% in line, 20% in the slot. He has 39 targets this year, 64.1% completion. And then Daniel Brown played 9 snaps last week. He was a practice squad call-up, but the other tight ends did not play in the game. So among the current personnel, getting the ball out wide has been a challenge. And of course, we know that's where Xavien Howard and Byron Jones lurk for 60 minutes every single Sunday. So it really feels like a game where you ask those two studs on the outside to lock up one side of the field. Then the middle of the field is where the Jets probably want to go. I mean, those are not good matchups out wide. So how do you make sure they can't nickel and dime you and sustain drives and pump the ball to those high catch percentage guys? Well, this is a deep position for Miami, even if Holland can't go and what he does on the inside of the formation defensively. Eric Rowe can do literally every job at safety or slot cornerback, cover tight ends, split safety, high safety. Brandon Jones, much of the same. And their flexibility in that capacity could help unlock Justin Coleman to match up inside. Miami's just very deep there. Your options are aplenty. Again, you can play coverage, you can play zone, and force Wilson to throw against those 7-man coverage looks. You can play a man and send pressure and see if they can win those one-on-ones on the outside. I'll be curious to see how Miami plays this. It's been hot this week here in South Florida, but Sunday is supposed to be 82 degrees with a 60% chance of rain. Boo to that. I want to see a good weather game, but maybe that affects the way the Jets approach this as well. We'll see. So some stats from those guys back in week 11. Crowder caught 6 of his 7 targets for 44 yards. Cole and Berrios both had 1 target apiece, no catches for them. And Ryan Griffin caught 3 of his 4 targets for 39 yards. So if you keep their pass production in that range, it'll be a long day for the Jets. How about up front on the offensive line? The battle of the trenches. We'll discuss that next, but first a break. All right, so as far as the Jets offensive line and Dolphins defensive line goes, here are the pressure, sack, hit, and pass blocking numbers for the Jets up front. George Fant is their left tackle, 18 pressures, 1 sack and 3 hits on 555 pass blocking snaps. He's been a decent little find for them there. Could possibly be the right tackle of the future, maybe a long-term swing tackle when Mekhi Becton comes back. I don't know. He's playing good ball, though. And then Elijah Vera Tucker, I think one of their best players already. 38 pressures allowed on 592 pass blocking snaps, but just 1 sack and 5 hits. Connor McGovern, 18 pressures, 4 sacks, and 2 hits at center. He's played 592. And Duvernay Tardif, 10 pressures allowed, 1 sack, and 2 hits, 145 pass-blocking snaps. So he just was a recent addition to the offensive line. And then Morgan Moses, 40 pressures, 3 sacks, and 10 hits on 556 pass-blocking snaps. And then Greg Van Roten did not play last week, but he's got 34 pressures, 3 sacks, 1 hit, 447 pass-blocking snaps. So you can see they've been relatively healthy up front. You know, sans big Mekhi Becton going out early in the season playing just 31 snaps. But in the game against Miami back in Week 11, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif was charged with 7 pressures allowed. Then Pro Football Focus also credits 4 pressures to the running backs with Miami's ability to get either free runners at the quarterback or the last line of defense with the tailbacks and pass protection. So finding a way to mix those fronts, show Wilson something different on a consistent basis, to me, that's the secret sauce in terms of heating up the pressure and trying to force some quick decisions, which, of course, can lead to bad decisions. So the Jets did have some success in the running game, and let's go ahead and finish up on this side of the football with exactly that. First off here, in the Dolphins linebackers versus the Jets running backs, we went over the receiver snap counts for last week. They were down Michael Carter, the rookie running back last week, and Ty Johnson stepped in and played 48 of the 66 snaps. But that should change with the rookie back, who has had a really nice first season here with Gangrene. But in that game, Michael Carter had just 63 yards on 9 carries. He broke a 39-yard run that we all remember, not our favorite moment of that game. But you got to be better in that regard in terms of limiting the big runs for the Jets here. Keeping the Jets in long down and distance plays into Miami's hands quite well, I think. And it does every week, but especially in this game, like we talked about in the passing game matchup, you keep them in 3rd and 8+. That really benefits Miami if you can do that. And the success they had in the run game that day, it all came off the left side. Here's their rushing and totals based upon which gap. Off left end, 2 for 10. Off left tackle, 1 for 4. Not a big sample size. Left guard, 3 for 46. So that's 5 yards average, 4 yards average, and then 15.3 yards average. And total on 6 runs off the left, 10 yards per carry. Again, tiny sample size. But the right side in the same sample size was a different story. The gaps working from center out to right end were 2.5, 2.0, 3.0, and 3.0. So trying to beat Vera Tucker and Fant, those are very big and very, very athletic players. That's the key to me, trying to find a way to make sure those two guys don't create big gaps and give you a bunch of big runs in this game. As for the backs, Carter is a nice combo player. Nice speed, got some pop. He's a quick decision maker. They'll involve both him and Ty Johnson in the passing game as well. And that will typically challenge your backer's speed, but also the motor slash effort of your defensive line. And if there's one thing I know about this Dolphins defense, one thing I can count on with them, it's those guys up front playing their asses off. And it's really true of the entire team, but those guys hustle and play like animals each and every week. Offensively, the Jets play 11 personnel 61% of the time. That's 1% over league average. And they play 12 personnel 21% of the time. That is league average. So a very common offense in the National Football League. It's the McVay and Shanahan system they basically run. The only other package with more than 3% usage for the Jets is 10 personnel. That's 4 receivers. It'll be interesting to see if they roll that out at all with the injuries they have at receiver. And look, they've run it 73 times in 13 games. So it's not like, again, no mathematician, that's not like a crazy number of plays per game. About 5 or 6 per game, but still part of the game plan. And, you know, Matt LaFleur off that McVay Shanahan system, window dressing, motions, shifts, play action, quarterback boot, roll, get outside the pocket, create some moving pockets for him. I like the way the Dolphins defend the style of offense. We talked about it before with the last year's games against the Niners and the Rams, you know, pressuring those possible boots, blitz the edge so the quarterback can't get wide. We'll see if Miami can keep that same approach and get some more success like they've had against this offensive system since Brian Flores arrived. On the other side of the football, Dolphins quarterbacks versus Jets safeties. We've touched on the 4 straight games here with a 100 passer rating for Tua Tagovailoa, and the first start of that period was against the Jets back in Week 11. He entered the Ravens game in the 3rd quarter, and a bad ball over the middle after the opening drive touchdown march in that game. But that was pretty much it, and it was pretty clean for him the rest of the way. He finishes with 273 passing yards, a couple of touchdown passes, and 27 for 33 passing. That's 81.8%, and the interception, of course. But the Jets' approach in that game, Well, it's indicative to how Saleh wants to play, right? We saw it in the San Francisco game, or when he was back in San Francisco, I should say. We've seen it here. One gap, play with your hair on fire, get upfield, and go get the quarterback without committing extra rushers. And we saw Miami counter that in the running game with some whams and traps, where if they want to shoot upfield and get in the backfield first thing, you let them. Just take them where they want to go, but you bring someone from the side who's not in front of them for that block, if that makes sense. So it's usually a tight end. Sometimes it can even be a guard from the backside of the formation or even a tackle. Get them upfield, knock them off that spot with the one gap penetration, and then you can run right in that vacated gap after they left that gap. So that's kind of an idea there about how those wham blocks work. And we saw it last time around. The Dolphins rushed for over 100 yards in this game. But also defensively, the Jets blitzed Tua 8 times, and Tua was 7 for 8 with 117 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. So the one mistake, and then really hitting everything else, he was also 7 for 11 with 107, 2 touchdowns, and a pick under pressure. But when he was kept clean, 20 for 22, 166 yards. And not blitzed, 4 rushes or fewer, 20 for 25, 156, and a tutty. And one of the challenges will be something we've seen him excel in during this 4-game run: the decision-making and influencing defense with the eyes, the feet, and everything else in between. It's been a topic for us here on Drive Time, and with the running back room facing some uncertainty as far as availability this week, can they continue to have that success if the Jets take away the run? Let's real quick hear from Tua on the approach of facing a team you just saw 4 weeks ago.
It helps, but I think what we try to do week in and week out is try to prepare as if we don't know the team. So we're going into this game as if we don't know this team. Obviously, there's some familiarity, but you got to prepare like this is a new team.
It's a pretty interesting standpoint there as far as you approach each game as if you don't know them from the previous games. And that's kind of how it works, right? Every game is its own independent clause. And so you approach it as such. You're not going to get the exact same game plan or the exact same team from the previous time. Obviously, you know some of the personnel, maybe some tendencies. But every team adjusts and adapts on a week-to-week basis. So that's a good example of how it is a week-to-week league, and you can't just roll out the same plan, the same idea every single week and expect to win football games. As for the Jets side of this equation, the second-year safety, Ashton Davis, he's the one that got Tua on the overthrow last time around. We'll see him plenty of times, plenty of snaps. And another guy we saw for just about the entire game last time around was Elijah Riley, a 2020 UDFA. Davis was a third-round draft pick that same year in 2020. So all three of these guys in this particular preview group were 2020 draft picks, Tua and the Jets' 2 safeties. And Riley never rushes. 2 reps in pass rushing in 4 games played. He has 109 coverage snaps and 129 against the run. And that's no accident. He's going to insert himself in there against the run, kind of in the way Brandon Jones or Eric Rowe does in terms of where they play down close to the line of scrimmage. And in fact, this is something he did every day in practice when he was at Army, right? A team that runs the football 95% of the time. He's allowed just 27 yards in those 109 coverage reps. No ball production yet as far as picks and PBUs. 4 for 4 on catches and targets. Now for Davis, same deal with the pass rush. They're not going to bring safeties. 6 all year. 321 snaps in coverage, 261 versus the run. And on those 321 coverage snaps, pretty effective if you want to go off of the 1 yard per coverage snap allowed. 267 yards, that's less than one, obviously. I can't give you a number there. 18 for 20 completions and targets for 2 touchdowns, a pick, and a PBU, but a passer rating of 131.3. And that right there is telling of the type of defense they want to play, right? They want to play man-free, cover one, and obviously some zone and different looks mixed in. But when it comes to pre-snap alignment, you're most likely going to have Davis in the post and Riley somewhere down in the box as the possible rat in the hole, the line of scrimmage, whatever the case may be. Teams average 88.6 rushing yards per game against single high looks against this team. That's a great number. And then 131.9 passing against those single high looks. When they go too high, 48.8 rushing yards. That shows you how little they play it, because too high always invites the run every damn time. They also allow 116.2 passing yards per coverage for too high safety pre-snap look. As far as the Dolphins receivers and tight ends versus the Jets cornerbacks out wide, Bryce Hall looks like he could be a nice find for them in the 5th round a couple years back. He had his best game against Miami this season, just 21 yards on 5 targets and 40 coverage snaps. Didn't see a whole lot of Waddle, and when he did, Waddle caught all 3 against him. Brandon Echols, 29 receptions allowed on 44 targets on 285 coverage snaps, but 396 yards allowed there. So there's been some production against him. One touchdown, no interceptions, but three pass breakups. So he has some ball skills. He's your other perimeter cornerback. Inside, there's two guys here, and they'll get Michael Carter the second back. He missed last week, but Javelin Guidry played in the slot last week. 19 receptions allowed on 29 coverage or targets, rather, 224 coverage snaps for 224 yards, the exact 1.0 average there. Two touchdowns allowed, no picks, two pass breakups. His game-by-game numbers have been really good. Now, he only played four snaps against Miami last time. We'll see if he draws some more Waddle when 17 plays inside, because like Waddle, Guidry can scoot, but can he keep up with the route running of Waddle? We'll see if that's the case, if that's a matchup. But again, they should get Michael Carter the second back. He's a slot guy as well. He's allowed 45 catches on 59 targets, 357 coverage snaps, 462 yards, no touchdowns or picks, three pass breakups. So teams have been able to find success through the air against this Jets secondary. Hopefully Miami can keep suit. In the Week 11 game, everybody had reps against everyone. So they don't travel. They play their position, and that allows the offense, obviously, to dictate matchups. And in that game, you know, obviously Mac Hollins got deep on that coverage bust, which speaks to how important it is for coverage and rush to marry up, because the Jets got home on that play. They just didn't cover it up well, and Tua was able to get away from the initial pressure and get vertical on that pass. And in that game, Waddle caught 8 of 9 targets for 65, had the rushing touchdown again, 3 for 3 on Bryce Hall, also caught one on Riley and Carter, and then two more against a couple linebackers and a safety as well. So he caught the ball on everybody he faced. And that, to me, goes back to this idea that they don't move around. Waddle's been your go-to guy. Find the matchups with him, the motions, get him involved. It could be a nice could be a nice day for Waddle if that is in fact the approach for Miami. There's not a lot of experience here in this room, so I think testing their ability to communicate, you know, whether it's switch releases, switch routes, the pre-snap motion, change the picture, I think that's all a very important part of what Miami wants to do here. As far as the Dolphins' offensive line versus the Jets' defensive line, John Franklin Myers leads them with 43 pressures, also has 19 run stops. Quinnen Williams, their other beefy guy up front, 31 pressures, 31 run stops. So both those guys very productive again here for the Jets. Fadu Kassi, 16 pressures, 23 run stops. Nathan Shepard, 10 pressures, 9 run stops. Shaq Lawson, we know him. He's got 17 pressures off the edge, 11 run stops. And Sheldon Rankins back inside, 16 pressures and 14 run stops. And the matchup last time around, look, this is a very good group for the Jets up front. And again, they want a one gap, not a whole bunch of blitzing. They want to play with power to the quarterback. And the key is to anchor and make sure you're on your assignments with double teams, because this team, if you get caught on a pick, or if you get caught with a game or, you know, a TE stunt, that's a good chance for these guys to get clear free rushes down the middle. And that's where you want to keep them clean as far as your quarterback here. And Miami got good push on the ground game last time around against this group, and that balance would be nice to maintain here for Miami. But last time around, they kicked out John Franklin Myers out wide quite a bit, and even some Quinnen Williams out as a 4-eye or 5 technique sometimes. So they want to get those pass rushers out wide against the Dolphins tackles. But Miami only allowed 6 pressures from the interior from Austin Jackson, Austin Ryder, and Robert Hunt inside, which obviously is a great way to let Tua navigate the pocket. I think he's, you know, it's harder to get away from the interior pressure. Tackle pressure, you can find ways to slide and step up and do different things to get out of that pressure. And that comes from our next position group here as well, the Dolphins running backs versus the Jets linebackers. We'll see what the running back room looks like. You know, at the time of this recording, Lindsey Gaskin and Ahmed are on the COVID IR. Duke is up on the active roster. And he spoke about how excited he is to suit up as a Dolphin at Hard Rock Stadium for the first time, obviously being from the 305, a big deal for him. But Miami in that game against the Jets averaged 7.0 yards per carry off left end. That's, you know, we talked about Liam Eichenberg had a big block on the Miles Gaskin run right before the 65-yard touchdown pass to Mac Hollins. That was a very key play in that game. Also, 5.8 yards behind Austin Jackson and 4.8 yards behind Robert Hunt. And Duke played in that game, and I thought he showed some stuff there and some veteran presence at the position, falling forward, maximizing the yards in every single run, hit the hole quickly, and just get the yards that are blocked for you. And honestly, if he just does that and the collection of backs here do that, and it keeps the offense on schedule, then that's a job very well done. Just stay in third and short and medium, and that's a good place for this Dolphins offense to live in this game. So we talked about the defensive line, and what about the linebackers here as they factor into the equation? C.J. Mosley, we talked about the lack of blitzing. He doesn't go very often. Just 55 pass rush reps and only 4 pressures to show for that. He does have 40 run stops and plays very well against the run going downhill, and he's a coverage backer too. I mean, his numbers haven't been great this year, but as far as, you know, keeping an eye on him and his spot drops, does a good job of getting depth and process as well underneath. I think the stats don't bear out exactly how good he's been there, but 54 for 60, 461 yards and 4 touchdowns. So you want to talk about backs and tight ends in the passing game? That's what teams have done against this Jets defense, and really the secondary as well. And Quincy Williams, this is more of a run-defending, tone-setting type of linebacker. He's a squatty body, 5'11", 226, explosive as hell, good downhill processing and flow. I like his game. 39 run stops on the season, just 26 pass rush reps, so half as many as Mosley. His coverage numbers, 35 for 49, 339 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. So those guys, you know, don't let them flow downhill in the run defense game. That's kind of the key. Some misdirection, some window dressing, get some false steps, and you can really take advantage of, hopefully, of that position group. Williams made 7 run stops in the Week 11 game, while Mosley had 4. So again, 11 run stops for those two guys in that game. They are big run stuffers. Before we get to the teams real quick, a quick break. All right, special teams. The Jets are 12th in special teams DVOA. Miami's 27th. Their punter, Braden Mann, has 20 punts this year, averages 44.5 per kick. They replaced Matt Amendola, who missed a few kicks in that game last time, with Eddie Pinheiro. He's 3 for 3, 2 of those under 40 yards, and a 46-yarder as well. The return game, Braxton Berrios, you guys know him, 13.8 yards per punt return with 12 total. That's a good number. Also, 23 kick returns for an average of 28.7. He also had a 79-yard return, too, so don't underestimate their punt and kick return game. The three keys to this game for me are pretty simple. Take away Zach Wilson's first option and limit the running back slash tight end production. That's where he wants to go. That's kind of the first read for a younger quarterback. And if you can confuse the picture and take away those reads, that could create a longer day for the Jets offense. Number two, stop Michael Carter in the Jets running game. Don't let him get out the gate again. Don't let those big runs happen, and you should be in good position. Number three, protect the football on offense. Don't give him short fields. Don't turn it over. Don't waste possessions. Protect the football. And again, you should be in good position. Dolphins will win this game if they avoid errors that give the Jets opportunities, like takeaways and short fields and quick, easy scoring opportunities. And the Jets will win if they win the trenches, run the ball against Miami, and get pressure on the quarterback that consistently impacts the passing game. So that's your preview for this game. I also want to tell you guys about a big, big deal that happened in the NFL on Wednesday. The NFL, you know, let's go ahead and just read the press release. Following ratification by the International Committee today, the NFL announced that the Miami Dolphins have been granted access to 3 international home marketing areas, IHMA, across Brazil, the United Kingdom, and Spain. This groundbreaking new initiative grants clubs access to international territories for marketing, fan engagement, and commercialization as part of an important long-term strategic effect to enable clubs to build their global brands while driving NFL fan growth internationally. So I know there's plenty of international fans out there. Brazil, UK, and Spain, you guys hit it big today with the Miami Dolphins. And that's kind of the idea here, right? Grow the fan base across the world. The NFL is becoming this global brand. The Miami Dolphins are certainly a global brand that has fans all across the world. We see it in our download numbers and our traction on the website. We appreciate all of our fans from all over the world. And we are very excited about reaching the fans across the globe to develop those meaningful relationships with y'all. It's very important to us here. We also, of course, want to build upon our strong community efforts here in the South Florida market to make international impact in each market. I'm very excited about this. I know that there's, again, so many of the UK fans of the Dolphins. There's so many of you guys out there. I think this is a big deal for you, and of course in Brazil and Spain as well. All right, one more bit of news here for the Jets game on Sunday. NFTs, baby. All ticket purchasers for the Week 15 Dolphins and Jets home game on 12/19 are going to receive an exclusive commemorative digital non-fungible token, also known as an NFT, sent via email in the days following. All season ticket members, single game buyers, and secondary purchasers who attend the game will receive the NFT free of charge. Only one commemorative virtual ticket available per account/order. The digital ticket is the Dolphins' first ever NFT distributed during an in-season matchup. First season in history where all 32 organizations are launching club-specific NFTs offered for purchase via the league's NFT marketplace. To check them out, visit nfl.live/nfts.com. Good stuff there, right? I think I did that right. Let's go ahead and make our Thursday night pick here. That we were 13-1 last week. The Cardinals did not give us the 14-0 week, but we finished 141, 65-1 through week 14 this year. Feeling good about that. We're taking the Chiefs over the Chargers tonight in primetime. So let's go Chiefs. As for my time on the podcast, that's going to be my time. You all, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. You can follow me on Twitter at WingfulNFL. Follow the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and OJ. They had Dwight Stevenson on this week. And, of course, our YouTube channel for all the media availabilities, as well as Dolphins Today coming your way tomorrow. Last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up, Caroline. Daddy is coming home.